The Great Second Advent Movement by J.N. Loughborough, Chapter 17. The Truth Advanced Under Difficulties. As a shepherd seeketh out his flock in the day that he is among his sheep that are scattered, so will I seek out my sheep and will deliver them out of all places where they have been scattered in the cloudy and dark day. Ezekiel 34, verse 12. Those who up to this time, 1847, had accepted the third angel's message were poor in this world's goods, and consequently could do but little financially for the spread of the message. Elder White and his wife, and Elder Bates, saw the importance of personal labor among the scattered brethren, and also the necessity of preparing reading matter to place in the hands of the people as an aid in leading them to the knowledge of the truth. Elder Bates was aided much in presenting the Sabbath question by his tract on that subject as he went to different localities and by the circulation of the same through the mail. He labored with utmost perseverance, a young sister's sacrifice for the truth. At one time, having no money to pay his fare, he was about to start on foot to go from Massachusetts to New Hampshire. Just then he received a letter from a young sister who had engaged to do housework at $1 per week that she might have something with which to help the cause. After working 1 week, she was so impressed with the thought that Elder Bates needed money that she went to her employer and obtained advance pay so as to enable her to send him at once $5. With this, he paid his fare to New Hampshire by public conveyance. At every place he had good meetings, and many souls accepted the truth. Housekeeping with borrowed furniture. In order to show the spirit of sacrifice which actuated the early pioneers in this message, we note the following from Mrs. White's statement of their situation in the winter of 1857 to 1858, when they occupied rooms in the spacious home of S. Howland at Topsham, Maine, where, with borrowed furniture, they set up housekeeping. Quote, "We were poor and saw close times. My husband worked at hauling stone on the railroad, which wore the skin of his fingers through, and the blood started in many places. We had resolved not to be dependent, but to support ourselves and have wherewith to help others. But we were not prospered. My husband worked very hard, but could not get what was due him for his labor." Elder White, cutting cordwood. "My husband left the railroad and with his axe went into the woods to chop cordwood. With a continual pain in his side, he worked from early morning until dark to earn about 50 cents a day. He was prevented from sleeping nights by severe pain. We soon received letters from brethren in different states inviting us to come and visit them. But as we had no means to take us out of the state, our reply was that the way was not open before us. We received a letter from Brother Chamberlain of Connecticut urging us to attend a conference in that state. We decided to go if we could obtain the means. Husband settled with his employer and found that there was $10 due him. With half of this, I purchased articles of clothing, which were much needed, and then patched my husband's overcoat, even piecing the patches, making it difficult to tell the original cloth in the sleeves. We had $5 left to take us to Dorchester, Massachusetts. Our trunk contained nearly everything we possessed on earth, but we enjoyed peace of mind and a clear conscience, and this we prized above earthly comforts. We called at the house of Brother Nichols, and before we left, Sister Nichols handed my husband $5, which paid our fare to Middleton, Connecticut. We were strangers in that city, and had never seen one of the brethren in the state. We had but 50 cents left. My husband did not dare to use that to hire a carriage, so he threw the trunk upon a pile of boards, and we walked on in search of someone of like faith. We soon found Brother Chamberlain, who took us to his house. Close quote. Conference at Rocky Hill, Connecticut. This conference was held at Rocky Hill, the meeting room being a large, unfinished chamber in Brother Belden's house. The following extract from a letter written by Elder White to S. Holland gives some interesting particulars respecting the meeting. Quote, April 20, 1848, Brother Belden sent his wagon to Middleton for us and the scattered brethren in that city. We arrived at his place, Rocky Hill, about 4 p.m, and in a few minutes in came Brother Bates and Gurney. We had a meeting that evening of about 15. Friday morning, the brethren came in until we numbered about 50. These were not all fully in the truth. Our meeting that day was very interesting. Brother Bates presented the commandments in a clear light, and their importance was urged home by powerful testimonies. The word had effect to establish those already in the truth, and to awaken those not fully decided. Close quote, Life Sketches, page 108. Invited to Oswego County, New York. As the result of the circulation of Elder Bates's tract among the Adventists, persons in other states began the observance of the Sabbath. Hiram Edson of Port Gibson, New York, wrote inviting Elder and Mrs. White and others to attend a conference of Sabbath keepers in Valde, Oswego County, in August 1848. He said that the brethren were generally poor, and he could not promise that they would do much toward defraying expenses. Elder White had received $40 as a result of labor performed in the hayfield. A part of this was spent in purchasing clothing, which was greatly needed, and the remainder paid their way to Volney and return. This conference in western New York was held in Mrs. Arnold's carriage house. There were about 35 persons present, all that could be collected in that part of the state, but hardly two of these were agreed. Each was strenuous for his own views, declaring that they were according to the Bible. All were anxious to advance their sentiments and to preach them. They were told that Elder White and his wife had not come so great a distance to hear them, but had come to teach them the truth. Mr. Arnold held that the 1,000 years of Revelation 20 were in the past, and that the 144,000 mentioned in Revelation were those raised at Christ's resurrection. Mr. Arnold objects to ordinances. As the emblems of our dying Lord were before this company, and as they were about to commemorate his sufferings, Mr. Arnold arose and said he had no faith in what they were about to do, that the Lord's Supper was a continuation of the Passover to be observed but once a year. These strange differences of opinion rolled a heavy weight upon Mrs. White. She well knew that Mr. Arnold was in error, and great grief pressed upon her spirits, for it seemed that God was dishonored. Some feared that she was dying, but Elders Bates, White, and Chamberlain, Gurney, and Edson prayed for her, and the Lord mercifully heard the prayers of his servants, and she revived. The light of heaven rested upon her, and she was soon lost to earthly things. While in this state, she was shown some of the errors of those present, and also truth in contrast with these errors, showing that these discordant views, which they claimed were according to the Bible, were only according to their opinions of the Bible, and that they must yield their errors and unite upon the third angel's message. The meeting ended gloriously. Truth gained the victory. Those who held these strange diversities of opinion confessed their errors and united upon the present truth of the third angel's message, and God greatly blessed them. A vision with wonderful use of the Bible. The following account of this meeting was given by Mr. Alexander Ross, January 4, 1884, who was one of the 35 composing the little gathering. He said, quote, Sister White, while in vision, arose to her feet and took the family Bible upon her left hand. The book was of ordinary size. While holding it open, high up, without looking toward it, with her right hand, she would turn from text to text, and placing her finger on the scripture, would repeat the same. I looked at many of the texts to see if she was repeating the one to which she pointed. Myself, or some of the company, looked at them all. In every case, she not only repeated the text to which she was pointed, but she did so while her eyes were looking upward and in an opposite direction from the Bible. It was these scriptures which she repeated that overthrew the false theories of the Sabbath keepers assembled at Volney in August 1848 and caused us to unite upon the truth. Close quote. Indeed, one must have been hard to convince who did not renounce error of doctrine corrected under such circumstances by plain text quoted from the Bible and in this remarkable manner. This company of Sabbath keepers in Oswego County, after their errors had thus been corrected and they had become united upon the truth, went forth from that meeting to spread the light to others. The results surely bore the evidence of being the work of God. Satan is ever ready to divide, distract, and scatter by whatever means he can employ. God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all churches of the saints. 1 Corinthians 14, verse 32. Miraculous cases of healing. After the conference before mentioned, meetings were held in Madison County, Port Gibson, Port Bryan, and in New York City. Following these was a general meeting in Connecticut. At some of these places, the Lord came very near to his servants, and the healing power of the great physician came upon the sick in answer to the earnest prayers of his people as they followed the rule laid down in the Epistle of James, James 5, verses 14 and 15. Even persons pronounced hopeless by physicians were healed of their diseases. Incidences of such a character have often been experienced at various times since 1845. Pioneers endure hardness. Elder White, in the Review and Herald of February 5, 1880, when speaking of those pioneer days, said, quote, "In our early laborers, we have suffered hunger for the want of proper food and cold for want of proper clothing. We deprived ourselves of even the necessities of life to save money for the cause of God, while at the same time we were wearing ourselves fearfully in order to accomplish the great amount of work that seemed necessary to be done in writing, editing, traveling, and preaching from state to state." Close quote. The year 1848 was memorable, not only in the Advent history, but politically. The truths of the third angel's message were very well defined, and the way was opening in different directions for the advancement of the work. At this time, events in the moral and political world were assuming a shape calculated to arouse anew the attention of the students of prophecy. Not only was there great confusion among the nations of the old world, but at Hydesville, Wayne County, New York, began the manifestations of modern spiritualism, which Bible students said must be the spirits of devils which are to gather the nations of the earth to the battle of the day of the Lord. Confusions of Nations in 1848. On the 21st day of February, 1848, when the courtiers of Louis Philippe of France were gathered around him, he said, quote, "I was never more firmly seated on the throne of empire than I am tonight," close quote. In the twilight of the next evening, wearing a pea jacket disguised as a hackney coachman, he fled outside the walls of the city of Paris, seeking a refuge for his personal safety. The cause of this great and sudden change is said to have been the result of some movement on his part favoring the papal usurpation, which offended his subjects and his soldiers. He had on that day completed in the city of Paris a grand military review of the French army, and when their arms were stacked, he retired to the palace, when suddenly a small boy jumped upon a cannon, waving a tricolored flag, crying, "Down with the Pope! Down with the Pope!" The soldiers taking up the cry, it passed swiftly up and down the lines, gaining strength as it went, until connected with it was the cry, "And down with the king!" In a few hours, all Paris was a scene of wild confusion. The soldiers, with guns in hand, accompanied by a mob, were rushing for the king's palace. He, on being informed of the turmoil, hastened to escape under disguise. Nations that were involved in the struggle. The commotion and unrest of France spread rapidly to other countries. Prussia, Hanover, Sardinia, Sicily, Naples, Venice, Lombardy, Tuscany, and Rome caught the same mob spirit. Within 3 months, all Europe was astir, and over 30 empires and kingdoms were in the greatest disorder. Thrones were burned in the streets. Kings and emperors were fleeing and hiding for fear of losing their lives. Politicians predicted that there would be a general revolution of the governments of the world. Many of the Advent ministers, who had not as yet heard of the third angel's message, saw this confusion and supposed it must be the rallying of the nations for the battle of the great day of God Almighty. Revelation 16, verses 13 to 15. Sealing message discovered. Just at this time, the Seventh-day Adventists were learning from the scriptures that the Sabbath of the fourth commandment was the sign or seal of the living God, and that the time had arrived for the proclamation of the sealing message of Revelation 10, verses 1 through 4, and they were devising ways and means of getting this message before the people. While the Seventh-day people were preparing for this work, the First-day Adventists were saying, "You are too late with your sealing message, for the battle of the great day and the Lord's actual coming are right upon us." Turmoil suddenly quieted down. Some 3 months later, the outburst among the nations quieted down, not, however, by a settlement of their grievances, but in a manner that journalists themselves could not explain. Of this trouble, Horace Greeley in the New York Tribune said, quote, "It was a great wonder to us all what started so suddenly that confusion among the nations, but it is a greater wonder still what stopped it." Close quote. Senator Chiat on the situation in the world. We come down to 1851 and find Senator Chiat in a speech before the United States Congress referring to the state of affairs in the old world and saying, quote, "What that state and aspect exactly is, that shadows, clouds, and darkness appear to rest upon, you entirely appreciate how wholly unsettled. It has seemed to me as if the prerogatives of crowns and the rights of men and the hoarded-up resentments of a thousand years were about to unsheathe the sword for a conflict in which blood shall flow as in apocalyptic vision to the bridles of the horses, and in which a whole race of men shall pass away, in which the great bell of time shall sound out another hour, in which society itself will be tried by fire and steel, whether it be of nature and of nature's God or not." Close quote. Testimony of November 18, 1848. While those claiming that this stir among the nations in 1848 was to usher in the coming of the Lord met with a sad disappointment, how was it with Seventh-day Adventists, who claimed that the time had come for the seal of the living God to be presented to the people? In reply, we quote from a tract published by Elder Joseph Bates in the month of January 1849. In speaking of a circumstance that occurred November 18, 1848, he says, quote, "A small company of brethren and sisters were assembled in a meeting in Dorchester near Boston, Massachusetts. Before the meeting commenced, some of us were examining some of the points in the sealing message. Some difference of opinion existed about the correctness of the view of the word ascending and etc. And whereas we had made the publishing of the message a subject of prayer at the Topsha Maine conference a little previous, and the way to publish appeared not sufficiently clear, we therefore resolved unitedly to refer it all to God. After some time spent in earnest prayer for light and instruction, God gave Sister White the following envision. Close quote. We quote the words as they were spoken by her while in vision. Words spoken in the vision. Quote, "Where did the light break out? Let thine angel teach us where the light broke out. It commenced from a little, when thou didst give one light after another. The testimony and commandments are linked together. They cannot be separated. That comes first, the Ten Commandments by God. He was well pleased when his law began to come up in strength, and the waste places began to be built up. Out of weakness, it has become strong from searching his word. The test upon it has been but a short time. It's the seal. It's coming up. It arises, commencing from the rising of the sun. Like the sun, first cold, grows warmer, and sends its rays. When that truth arose, there was but little light in it, but it has been increasing. Of the power of these rays, it grows in strength. The greatest weight and light is on that truth, for it lasts forever, when the Bible is not needed. It arose there in the east. It began with a small light, but its beams are healing. Oh, how mighty is that truth! It's the highest after they enter the goodly land, but it will increase till they are made immortal. It commenced from the rising of the sun, keeps on its course like the sun, but it never sets. The angels are holding the four winds. It is God that restrains the powers. The angels have not let go, for the saints are not all sealed. When Michael stands up, this trouble will be all over the earth. Why, they are just ready to blow. There's a check put on, because the saints are not sealed. Yea, publish the things that has been seen and heard, and the blessing of God will attend. Look ye, that rising is in strength, and grows brighter and brighter. Close quote. A Seal of the Living God. Pages 24 to 26. After coming out of this vision, Mrs. White said to her husband, "I have a message for you. You must begin to print a little paper and send it out to the people. Let it be small at first, but as the people read, they will send you means with which to print, and it will be success from the first. From this small beginning, it was shown to me to be like streams of light that went clear round the world." Doubtful from a human standpoint. These predictions were made in 1848 concerning the rise and spread of the Sabbath truth. To look at the situation from a human standpoint at that time, reason would say that prediction can never be fulfilled. One man remarked to one of our laborers soon after the prediction was made, "It will take you 144,000 years to do what you propose." What, they would say? Three preachers, Elder White and a wife, and Elder Bates, all penniless, with less than 100 adherents, all of whom are destitute of money, going forth with a few hundred copies of an 80-page tract on the Sabbath question to give a warning message to all the world? Preposterous assumption. While those thus reasoning said impossible, faith in the message and the testimony of assured success said, "In the name of Israel's God, it will be done." And trusting in his strength, it must be done. How the first Seventh-day Adventist paper was printed. From the time the testimony was born concerning the publishing work, Many prayers were offered by those observing the seventh day that the Lord would open the way for the printing of the little paper. The great lack of money with which to secure the publication of the first number, in the month of June 1849, Elder White had the opportunity of mowing 40 acres of timothy grass with a hand seed at 75 cents per acre, and thus he was enabled to produce the first number of the little journal. It may not be out of place to insert at this point a facsimile of the first page of the little sheet. The reader will observe in the first column the words of Elder White, and where he says, quote, "The way has not been opened to commence the work until now," close quote. And you can also see that it was his self-sacrificing that opened the way. Mrs. White's account of the first papers. Mrs. White says at the beginning of the publishing work, quote, "My husband began to publish a small sheet at Middleton, 8 miles from Rocky Hill, Connecticut, and often walked this distance and back again, although he was then lame. When he brought the first number from the printing office, we all bowed around it, asking the Lord with humble hearts and many tears to let his blessing rest upon the feeble efforts of his servant. He then directed the paper to all those who he thought would read it, and carried it to the post office in a carpet bag. Every number was taken from Middleton to Rocky Hill, and always before preparing them for the post office, they were spread before the Lord, and earnest prayers mingled with tears were offered to God that his blessing would attend the silent messengers. Very soon, letters came bringing means to publish the paper and the good news of many souls embracing the truth." Close quote, Life Sketches, pages 125 to 127. Prediction of support of the paper fulfilled. It is with feelings deeper than mere interest that we present this, the first page of the first paper published by Seventh-day Adventists. The whole volume of The Present Truth consisted of 11 numbers of 8 pages, 2 columns each. The reading matter on the page measured 4 and 5/8 by 8 inches. Numbers 1 and 4 were printed in July, August, and September at Middleton, Connecticut. Numbers 5 to 9 were printed at Oswego, New York, and are dated December 1849, March, April, and May 1850. Number 11 is dated November 1850 and was printed at Paris, Maine. In number 6, Elder White said, quote, "While publishing the first 4 numbers, more than enough money came in to pay for the papers. It has been used in paying our expenses to the meetings that we have attended," close quote. During the year 1849, under the influence of these papers and the pioneer labors of Elder Bates, many accepted the message in Vermont, Michigan, and other states. In contrast with the unpromising situation of the work in 1848, we will consider a few facts as they exist in 1905, and thus be enabled better to judge respecting the final outcome of this cause, whether those were right who opposed the humble beginning of the message, or the God of heaven who spake through his handmaid of the increasing strength of the sealing work. Progress of the publishing work. This truth is now being proclaimed and printed in about 40 of the leading languages of the world. Instead of 3 ministers, there are, counting those that are ordained and the licentiates, over 600, besides hundreds of others working as physicians, Bible workers, teachers, and medical missionaries. The literature of the denomination is represented in over 600 different periodicals, which are printed in nearly a score of publishing houses located in Europe, Asia, Africa, North and South America, the islands of the Pacific, and Australia. In these publishing houses, there are printed over 1,100 different books, pamphlets, and tracts. To obtain a copy of each, with the periodicals for 1 year, would require about $340. Instead of simply 100 adherents, there are not far from 100,000 who are rejoicing in this truth. Truly, this message, like the sun, is arising, and we may say, in the language of the testimony of 1848, oh, the power of these rays, the condition of the nations. While the message has been thus advancing, what has been the condition of the nations? From that time down, in the public journals, we have often been treated to statements concerning the general war that is soon to be in Europe. While there has been strife here and an outbreak there, the general whirlwind is held back. The four winds are not permitted to blow all at once until the servants of God are sealed. That the elements of strife and war are there, but do not break out because they are held in check, is evident to all. Henry Ward Beecher, not long before his death, called the maintaining of such large armies in Europe, quote, drawing the lifeblood beforehand for fear it would be split, close quote. The situation among the nations, with their grudges and animosities, and their threatening attitude toward one another, he compared to a deadlock caused by a group of men pointing daggers at each other's breasts, not one of whom dared to strike for fear of being struck. But, said he, some one of them will soon see the favorable time to strike, and then the general melee will come. Comparison of War Implements. Since 1848, implements of war have been constructed compared with which the best of that time would now be counted as mere toys. The Peace Association of America, in making its call for peace services on Peace Sunday, December 15, 1895, said this, quote, now, while there is a decided advancement in civilization, on the other hand, there are greater preparations for war among the nations than ever before. Close quote. General Miles on War Preparations. General Nelson A. Miles, in a speech at a mass meeting in Washington, D.C., January 12, 1904, said, quote, in this enlightened age of progress and intelligent, refined civilization, we would be glad to believe that the burdens and dangers of war have been lessened. Yet, strange as it may seem, there never has been a time in the world's history when so much wealth was squandered in preparation for war, nor when so many millions of trained, skilled, disciplined men, armed with the most destructive weapons, were taken from the avenues of peaceful industry as at the present time. Close quote. But the whirlwind of war still delays, while the sealing work goes on. This is the end of chapter 17.